from 1949 to the present. Also, listen to A Bowl of Soul in the archives. If you like A Bowl of Soul, rate us in iTunes. Come and catch a groove on A Bowl of Soul. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Do you want to know the latest news or upcoming events? Follow us at Twitter at PRN_radio or click the Twitter icon on our homepage. You can also friend us on Facebook. Just search Progressive Radio Network. Always new and up to date. The Progressive Radio Network, your home for thoughtful and informative information.
Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, April 16th, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 1 to 2 Eastern Time and from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.FM.
And today you can hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we got a great show for you today that's going to include, is the Tamiflu drug a deceptive technique?
And dental x-rays linked to brain tumors.
And now phthalates, which everybody's been wondering about, are linked to type 2 diabetes.
And the side effects of breast cancer treatment.
Okay, and how about the cruciferous vegetables are linked to breast cancer survival? Maybe better than chemotherapy.
And low calcium intake increases the risk of kidney stones and much more.
And if you want to join our conversation today, you have questions about our topics or your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888.
Don't you think that studies and trials done on patients should be publicly available? You know, we pay for the approval of drugs with taxes and again when we buy them. And we don't get to review the information ourselves, so we can't really make our own decisions about whether the report's ethical or biased from the pharmaceutical company's point of view, whether we should really be taking the medication. So let's talk about what happened in the case of Tamiflu.
Yeah, this is a disaster. You start looking at what's happened here and looking at all the data behind it or the data that's not behind it, and it's simply shocking. You would think that with the issues that we have going here with a drug like this, it's supported by people who are in the World Health Organization and by the CDC. This is something that's really, it's just obnoxious.
Well, they're saying that it's an essential drug.
Well, yeah, exactly. And they're spending billions of dollars to stockpile this drug. And now in the Public Library of Science, a publication in April of 2012, Peter Doshi and Tom Jefferson, who are experts from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and from the Cochrane Collaboration in Rome, Italy, are saying we don't have the data to know because the drug company, Roche, won't disclose it. They won't give us the information that has the hard data in it, and yet the government
paid for.
I know. It's like, what? I mean, yes, they must think we're stupid, and yes, they must think they can get away with it, because guess what? They are getting away with it.
So, and we're falling for it. Everybody's going and thinking that that's what's going to help them.
Well,
there's no clear evidence that it prevents pneumonia, and it only reduces actually the symptoms by a half to one day.
And then do you want to take all those side effects risks?
Does it really save lives?
Well, there's no question that we don't have the data, and yet we're spending billions of dollars.
So let's talk about some of the side effects.
All right. You're looking at all kinds of digestive things. You can get something that's like the flu itself. You get nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. If you're unlucky, you'll get hepatitis. You may have an anaphylactic reaction. There are people getting this hemorrhagic colitis from it. A lot of neurological symptoms and psychiatric symptoms like hallucinations. And in Japan, there are a lot of reports of suicides. And here we are taking this thing, thinking that it's saving lives. And if you ask doctors about it, they can say, oh, of course it saves lives. That's why we use it. But where's the data? Why isn't it being disclosed? If it's really so effective, don't you think they would be very willing to give it to us and say, here, now you know? And they're talking about trade secret protection. When you've got business that trumps service, this is the kind of thing that happens. We need a revamping, not just of the pharmaceutical industry, but of the whole culture. Because we've got fatal fundamentalistic flaws across every segment of our culture, whether it be business or law, medicine, religion, science, sports, you name it. And we've got the same low standard of concern that's more about things than it is about service. We get so messed up when it comes to stuff and forget about the things that are really important in life, that when we lose them, you know, that money can't buy or do anything about, then we get really upset. Things like, well, can you see it's a beautiful day today? Can you hear on this radio station? Can you go out tonight and look at the stars or watch a sunset? Can you be with the person that you love and just share things? All these kinds of things are where the real values in life are, and we've been so hoodwinked and we're so silly about believing what's told to us that we live in this economic world that is giving us way more than what we need. And it's not like third world countries don't have a huge problem here. They do, and economics should be something that's supported there, but it shouldn't be in this country supported anywhere near to the extent it is. We need community, not money.
And yet, you know, we're so brainwashed about drugs and the Western medicine model. And yet, when a lot of people are coming around to holistic medicine and alternatives and things like that, and yet there are so many people that are still brainwashed about the Western model.
Well, try the whole country, Vicki.
When there are things that even aren't proven. And yet when you suggest something that's alternative, they're afraid to do it.
Well, it's threatening. If you've got a million doctors out there who are all saying one thing, and you've got a few that are saying, no, that's wrong. I mean, look at the immunization issues that we have here and the stuff on the swine flu. We talk about a total disaster of lies and deceit.
Well, that's what I was thinking of when we were talking about the Tamiflu, because I can remember a few years ago when Andrew Weil had something on his website about astragalus.
Yeah, right.
That it was a healthy thing to take for the flu, and he got into so much trouble.
Oh, the FDA was going to close him down because he was saying something that they didn't want to hear. The whole thing
about
they
want you to take pharmaceutical drugs.
Well, they want the money. See, the people who are in the power position are very conservative. They don't want any changes to occur because if those changes occur, it costs them a lot of money. And they don't care about you. They care about them. We live in a narcissistic, competitive, adversarial world where it's one person against the other and nobody cares about their neighbor. What kind of a way is that to live? I mean, the most important health thing that we could discuss that involves the whole world is about how do we live our lives? It's our lifestyle. What do we value? What will we do to get the things that we really need, which are centered around community and love and sharing and giving and taking care of people? We shouldn't be stepping over people in the streets of San Francisco who are homeless.
And what about cleaning up the environment and going green?
It's about money. It's not about concern for Mother Earth. It's not about concern for our fellow community people. It's not even about marriages these days. How many marriages actually make it? We're into ourselves. We're not into giving and sharing and connecting. We don't have the oneness of the universe concept that's really delved into or etched into our brains.
Well,
and that's how things are.
Yeah, and we've done a great job of poisoning our water, food, and air.
And soil. Exactly.
Everything. I mean, And it's backfiring on us in so many ways. Like last week, we were talking about the bees. You know, there aren't hardly any bees left anymore.
Isn't that something? There's a dramatic decrease
from
in that.
All the pesticides.
Yeah, it's hard to believe.
Killing the bees.
Sure. Well, what are you going to do today that's going to help one other person? Just one other person. What I enjoy doing is seeing people in my office, and these are people who can't afford anything, and yet I have a technology or some kind of approach that I can give them that they can't get hardly anyplace else. And I will give it to them on a sliding scale if it's necessary, because I can't possibly see withholding it because, you don't have enough money, go someplace else, which they can't do. And I'm talking about people who have diabetes and neuropathy or chemotherapy-induced neuropathies or horrible pain that's caused by neuropathic pain. Things like RSD, that's CRPS 1 and 2. All these things are treatable using that technology. None of the other doctors believe you, and yet we have clinical trials that we're involved with that are showing that it works. And you're going to tell people, no, go someplace else because you haven't got the money to pay for it? What kind of a human being can you be? What kind of a human being leaves people on the streets of our major cities that are homeless? What kind of a country takes people's homes away, as we're doing in this country? Why do we act as though those that have the money have the power and be able to do the things that they can get that other people can't? What kind of equality is that? What kind of love and support? I mean, it's definitely not community. So we're looking at something like the Tamiflu deception, which is what I call this. It's like the infection deception of the swine flu. You know, I wrote an article. It was published in the Townsend Letter, which is a journal for doctors and for patients.
If you're interested, you can find it on drsaputo.com.
Oh, go to the website and put the infection deception there. And it's a well-referenced 15-page article that talks about why all this business about the swine flu was total bull, just total bull. When you look at what happened and trace it day by day, which I did for about a year, and saw what the CDC, the World Health Organization, or the White House did, it's enough to make you throw up.
And then you've got people standing in line to get the shot.
I want mine, and there are people cutting in line to try to get it because they think, I mean, they've been so brainwashed, they think it actually does something. There's no data to prove that.
If you want to join into our conversation or have any questions about your health, the number here in Prescriptions for Health on PRN.FM is 888-874-4888. That's 888, lots of eights.
Yeah.
Three eights and then an 874 and a four and then three more eights. So 888-874-4888.
All right, Vicki. Yeah, because we'd like to hear some of your stories about what's happened to you or what you think. Have you got an opinion about this? Either the same or not the same. You don't have to argue with us, but I mean, if you want to, that's okay. But you may want to support and say, yeah, I think that's true. We'd like to hear from you.
Okay, so about dental x-rays, I thought this was kind of a scary story, how dental x-rays are linked to the most common type of brain tumor in the United States. It's called a meningioma.
Well, it's not the most – well, it is. You're right. It is the most common. I hadn't thought about that.
But this is startling, since most of us just go along with what our dentist recommends, and people in our age group particularly have exposed ourselves to those bite wing exams, you know, where you bite that thing in your mouth?
Sure, or the Panorex things.
Yeah, and that's the one that does it from the outside of your mouth to show all of your teeth. But, you know, it's like you think you're being a good patient and you're taking good care of your teeth and yourself, and the dentist says get these x-rays every year or more often, I guess, if you have a problem, and look at what can happen.
These are the kinds of things that we take for granted, that we just assume can't be dangerous because we don't understand the biophysics of what's happening. And yet we act as though we do. So we wind up doing all these tests, these x-ray tests, that are digitally taken, have very low dose of x-ray, and we can't figure out for the life of us why they could possibly cause some kind of problem. Yet when we take a look and see if it is causing a problem, the answer is yes, it is. So what does that prove? That proves we don't know what we're doing. That's all that proves.
Just like it's so scary, I think, at the airport where they're x-raying people. Now they're finding out that the techs that are x-raying, I think, your baggage or whatever, that they're having problems from the radiation.
Well, look at it this way. They say it's such a low dose, how could it be a problem? But I'll tell you how it can be a problem. The people from University of California, San Francisco, Department of Dermatology, about 2 years ago published a paper that said, we'll tell you how it causes a problem. You're giving radiation that only goes like skin deep, and you're saying the dose is so low that it's not a problem for the whole body. And we'd all agree that's probably true.
Well, what about skin cancer?
Well, yeah, it's all concentrated in the skin. So you're giving a very high dose relative to what the rest of the body is getting that causes problems, at least in theory, to cause at least skin cancers.
Maybe you need to put on sunscreen before you go to the airport.
There you go. Wear your sunscreen to the airport. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, all these things that happen like that are really disturbing. So,
well, you know, I have a friend that has cancer, and she was going to take a trip on the airplane, and I told her not to let them x-ray her at the airport.
Right.
And she's like, oh, well, I don't want to cause a fuss.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to cause any trouble. So this is what happens with people. They get afraid of causing trouble or drawing attention to themselves, and they go along with the program.
Yeah, well, that's right. You need to be able to use your common sense. You cannot just trust the people who have a vested interest in a particular thing that's being done because they're making money from it. And that's exactly what's happening.
Okay, and the other thing that they're finding out is that the younger you get these x-rays, the worse. So be a proactive parent when you take your kid to the dentist and have something to say about whether they have these x-rays or not.
All right. Well, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We'll be back taking your calls and talking a little bit more about dental x-rays after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
I'm going to talk about God's pharmacy. You know, God left us a great clue as to what foods help what parts of our body. Now, this isn't new. A lot of people may have seen this on the internet or whatever, but I really felt like it was something worth going over. A sliced carrot looks like the human eye. Think about the middle of that. The pupil, the iris, the radiating lines, they look just like the human eye. And yes, science now shows that carrots greatly enhance blood flow to and the function of the eyes. And then a tomato. It has four chambers and it's red. And the heart has four chambers and it's red. And the grapes, they hang in a cluster that has the shape of a heart. And each grape looks like a blood cell, and research today shows that grapes, due to their resveratrol, are also heart and blood vitalizing food. And think about a walnut. It looks just like a little brain, doesn't it?
It really does, yeah.
A left and a right hemisphere with the upper cerebrums and the lower cerebellums, even the wrinkles and the folds in the nut, they're just like the neocortex. And we now know that walnuts help develop more than 36 neuron transmitters for brain function. And then there's kidney beans. Well, they actually heal and help maintain kidney function. And yes, they look exactly like the human kidneys. That's why they call them kidney beans. And then there's things like celery, bok choy, rhubarb, and many more that look just like bones. And these foods specifically target bone strength. Now, I'm going to go over some other surprising food correlations with the body and some of their health benefits on my second 2020 tip.
Okay, that's really fascinating stuff. Some of the parallels that we see. You know, there's so many things like that. You could correlate almost anything in the universe because the universe is reflexive. And what I mean by that, it allows you to make correlations about things from your point of view. And they're absolutely right from your point of view. But there are also many, many other points of view that you could take as well. And so it's just kind of interesting to keep an open mind about that. Louise Hayden did some stuff like this too, where she said, you know, if you have a back problem or a neck problem, it's related to some kind of thing, like maybe you're trying to hold up the world with your efforts to do something. It's amazing how this stuff is what it's like. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Alan. Hi, Alan.
Hello.
How are you?
Okay, well, I'm calling. It's interesting what you're talking about today because, as you know, I spoke to you last week about Parkinson's. And my neurologist wants me to take a thing called the DAT scan. It's for evaluating Parkinson's syndrome versus essential tremor. It's the first FDA-approved radiopharmaceutical adjunct imaging agent to help evaluate Parkinson's disease.
Well, let's ask him a question. Is it going to change the treatment in a meaningful way? And the answer is probably not. I mean, if he's going to try the drugs on you because that's what he does anyway, to try and see if he can control the tremor.
No, it's not.
So
it's
what's
not
the benefit?
It's not a drug. It's like a MRI CAT scan type of thing.
No. I understand that part. But what I'm saying is that the treatment, whether he does this test or doesn't do the test, and whether it's an essential tremor or it's Parkinson's disease, is probably not going to change what he does. So, because he's probably still going to try the Parkinson's disease drugs and see if they work on you. My recommendation would be that
I don't know if you recall or not, but I did some research, and I'm not taking the Sitiment. I'm taking a herb called Mucuna.
Uh-huh.
And I would like you, if possible, to Google it, because it has L-DOPA in it. It's an herb. It's a plan.
Well, it's just another way of doing things. It's sort of like looking at whether or not you want to use some of the if you want to use the statin drugs for cholesterol, or if you want to use the red rice yeast for it. It's the same thing. I think that the real thing is to find somebody who can do something to help Parkinson's disease. And there's a guy named David Perlmutter in Florida who I think is one of the best in the world at assessing that. I would urge you to maybe look him up, okay, on a Google search and give him a call and see what his suggestions might be to help you with the treatment. Because he's doing things like using IV glutathione and coenzyme Q10, which you know about, and some other things that may be of some value. And I've seen in changing the way that Parkinson's disease is, I've seen some of his movies of people before and after, and I'm talking about minutes afterwards, who have dramatic changes. Now, I'll have to admit, in my own practice, I've had no success doing the kinds of things he does, but he has, and so why not give him a call? So that's my suggestion, and let's do that.
Okay. What's his first name?
It's David Perlmutter, P-E-R-L-M-U-T-T-E-R.
Uh-huh. Now,
So give that a try and give us a call back after you do that, and we'll go from there. Thanks for your call. The lines are open. The number is 888-874-4888. We said we're going to talk a little bit more about dental x-rays and the association with meningioma, and let you know that there have been some, that the studies that were done were published in a journal called Cancer, which is a major peer-reviewed journal of the American Cancer Society. And basically what they're saying is that patients who have had these dental x-rays over in general have twice the risk for meningioma. But if you look at kids that are under the age of 10, they've got who have these x-rays, they're 4.9 times increased in their risk for developing meningioma. And adults in general, if they do it on a yearly basis, it's more like three times what's associated there. So we've got an association here that's very worrisome.
It's okay to say no. You know, every time I go get my teeth cleaned, and I go every 3 months, they ask me to get an x-ray.
Yeah, well, the answer should I've done this for
well,
years.
Well, that's because I say no. So they keep at, they ask me every time, and I say no, and they say okay, and just check off that they've asked me. So it's no big deal to say no.
Well, it brings up other issues too.
The it's question, better to not get the x-rays unless you have symptoms.
Well, I think that's generally true for a lot of tests. That goes for the EKG, the chest x-ray, the cardiac echo, the carotid ultrasound, and so many other tests that we look at as sometimes it's just routine. You know, they've got these vans that are moving around from place to place. They want to measure your cholesterol. They want to do a carotid ultrasound. They want to do an EKG. They want to do a vascular study to see if you have any problems with peripheral vascular disease. And the next thing you know is they're sending you back these reports and saying, well, you got this problem and that one. You better go to your doctor and get this test done or, you know, tell your friends about what we're doing because it makes more money for us. And in their hearts, they're thinking they're doing a good thing. But it's overuse of tests. And that's what's happening with this as well. We can, from a clinical point of view, tell a lot about what's going on by looking at somebody's mouth. You don't necessarily have to have an x-ray. And if you've already done restorative work, I don't think you need an x-ray for 5 years or maybe longer or maybe not ever again, depending on what happens. Your clinical skills do work. And then look
just
at
like when you've had a hysterectomy, you don't really need to
have a pap smear anymore. Well, that's really right.
There's nothing there to pap.
Well, look at the kinds of tests that we do that don't seem to be a problem. You look at the MRI. Well, by itself, you can't figure out if these high magnetic fields that we're in are going to cause a problem down the road because we just haven't been using them long enough maybe to know. Maybe it takes 30 years for a problem to develop. You just don't know. And the same thing was with CT scans. We thought that wasn't a big problem either, but the dose of radiation we're finding is a big deal, and it does cause cancer. And then you look at low-dose things, okay, like John Gottman did, the professor from UC Berkeley, wrote a whole book on looking at the association of people who were close to areas where radiologists were. And they found that the risk for breast cancer and the risk for heart attacks was much higher in those settings. So it's an association. It doesn't mean it causes it, but it should alert your mind to the possibility that this is a sleeping dog.
Well, anyway, to sum this up, you know, today's dental patients are exposed to lower doses of radiation than in the past. But, you know, we've been talking about it's powerful to have low doses of radiation anyway. But the American Dental Association has guidelines now for healthy persons, and they suggest that children get an x-ray every 1 to 2 years, teens every 1.5 to 3 years, and adults every 2 to 3 years.
Well, that's just good business practice. And that may not have anything to do with
the
health practice.
And that might be biased also because it's the American Dental
Association. Well, look at them when it comes to amalgams. They're telling you that mercury in your mouth is not a problem when the EPA says you have to put it in either a toxic waste dump or somebody's mouth. It's like, who's thinking? I mean, this whole thing is just nuts. Anyway, the lines are open. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes after a station break, coming back with things like, what about the side effects of breast cancer treatment? And what about cruciferous vegetables being as powerful as some chemotherapy agents?
And phthalates.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. If you have a question about your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888.
The topic of phthalates isn't a new one, and there's a lot of cover-up about them. And there's certain other even environmental chemicals that can contribute to the development of poor health. Now what we're going to be talking about this morning or this afternoon, depending on where you are, is the development of diabetes with these environmental toxins. And there's a connection between phthalates that are found in cosmetics and plastics and the risk of developing diabetes among seniors. Even at modest increase, the phthalate levels risks in diabetes is doubled. So when we're talking about cosmetics, and it also includes fragrances and other self-care products and solid air fresheners, scented candles, even ink as a softening agent.
Yeah, well, it's amazing how ubiquitous this is. And when the Environmental Working Group did a study on 9 people scattered throughout the U.S., they collected blood and urine samples to see how many toxins they had. And they looked for 210 toxins and found that everybody, no exceptions, had phthalates that they were being poisoned by.
So think about that. I mean, it's really kind of hard to take in that we're so loaded with all these toxins.
Well, it's something we need to pay a lot of attention to because we're polluting this planet. It's just about that simple. So we've got to do something about that. Anyway, the lines are open here, and we have a few calls, so we're going to go ahead and catch up on calls. We have a call from Mike in New York. Hi, Mike. You there?
Yeah, hi.
How you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. I have CLL, and I've had it for about 13 years, and I'm doing chemotherapy. I was in pretty bad shape. I have a Q11 deletion, and I have Richter syndrome.
All right.
So I was in bad shape, but I got a hold of a drug. My hematologist, oncologist, we got a hold of a drug called Treanda, which is a very expensive drug, but made in Germany. And it worked. You know, it's knocking out the leukemia. But what I'd like to do is supplement and keep it down, or get rid of like quick sugar and things like that. I'm trying to take, but there's certain drugs I'm sort of worried about that it may start up the cancer again.
Well, you have a good point, and definitely with this kind of leukemia, chemotherapy is usually quite helpful, and so you're on the right track. And it may be that they can put you in a remission or hold things down for years and years, so that's good. But you're asking a good question, and that's what can you do to try and improve your risk for developing some kind of exacerbation of leukemia, or maybe get it to go away. And see, there are two ways to look at cancer. One is you want to go in there and kill the cancer cells, and that's what we do in medicine. So we give you these toxic drugs that do a lot to try and kill those cancer cells, and we do a pretty good job, as you know, because you're doing well. But you can change the internal milieu, the internal environment, that area that says, no cancer, this is not hospital for you anymore. And the best things you can do start with lifestyle. So you're looking at a healthy diet, okay? And you're right. get rid of the sugar. Maybe you want to have more in the way of healthy fats, which sounds ridiculous to most people because they don't know that much about fat metabolism. But things like coconut oil and high-grade other kinds of olive oil.
And flaxseed oil.
Yeah, things like that would be great if they're used properly.
I'm using those things. I have been for years trying to get on the Mediterranean diet.
Okay, so the oils are part of it, but you can also do exercise. Exercise does a lot to reduce the risk for exacerbations of cancer. And they can slow down the metastatic potential of the cancer cells because you do a lot to detoxify when you do that, and you do a lot to build up your normal mitochondria, which you need to be able to function and produce energy properly. You reduce your stress levels, another big thing. You could look at things like getting enough sleep. I mean, when the American Cancer Society, when it did a few of the good things that it did back in the late 50s, did a study on 1 million people and looked at lifestyle factors, including diet, exercise, stress, smoking, and sleep. And what they found is that people who had less than 4 hours of sleep a night had the highest risk for developing a cancer recurrence. So you're looking at stuff that you can do that's really important. You can alkalinize, you know, to use foods that are alkaline rather than those that are acid. That seems to make a difference. And do things to try and boost immunity, both from the point of view of some of the foods that you eat.
Cruciferous vegetables are good.
Real good thing to do. We have a whole, if we get to it today, we'll talk about how that can help a lot of people who have breast cancer more than the chemotherapy has once they've got it. This is shocking at what lifestyle can do. So, Mike, you've got a good point. These are the things you should be focusing on.
One of my big questions with supplements, I'm sort of worried about vitamin C. I know it's a good supplement, but I'd read Dr. Burton's book on cancer. There was a little blurb in there about vitamin C in CLL that it promoted the CLL. Is that true? Is that something to watch out for?
Listen, you can find all kinds of things, and there are people treating leukemias, okay, with intravenous vitamin C. So you have to know what you're doing. You want to get a doctor who knows nutritional medicine. If you're there in New York, you know, there are a lot of people there. Leo Galland would be one that would know. Michael Schachter, another brilliant oncologist there who I'd recommend that you give a call to. He's in Suffern, New York, is an outstanding doctor who can probably tell you the kinds of answer the questions that you're asking. So,
what about herbs though? Things like artemisinin.
Well, they can be helpful too, but you know, we can't be just making suggestions like that. There are things to think about. Go see Michael Schachter. I'm going to spell you his name. It's SCHACHTER. Michael Schachter. He's a stellar doctor. I know him personally, and we've had long conversations. And if I had cancer myself, I'd think about coming to New York to ask him. Okay? Thanks for calling,
Mike. Thank you very much.
Okay. The lines are open. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll get back. I have a couple more calls I want to get to, one on infrared light therapy and another one on dental x-rays after Vicki's final 2020 tip.
Okay, I have more on God's pharmacy. Avocados, eggplant, pears. Mm-hmm. Think about what they look like.
Right.
They target the health and function of the womb. That's the uterus of the female.
Louise, hey, I love you.
And they look just like it. And today's research shows that when a woman eats one avocado a week, it balances hormones, sheds unwanted birth weight, and prevent cervical cancer. So,
wow.
And how profound is this? It takes exactly 9 months to grow an avocado from blossom to ripened fruit.
Oh, that's too funny.
Figs, they're full of seeds and they hang in twos when they grow.
Oh, I wonder what they're good for.
They increase the mobility of sperm. And they increase the numbers of sperm as well as to overcome male sterility.
Oh, that's great.
Sweet potatoes, looks like the pancreas, and it actually balances the glycemic index in diabetes.
Good avocado too.
Olives, they assist the health and function of the ovaries.
Really?
Then oranges, grapefruits, and other citrus fruits. They look just like the mammary glands of the female and actually assist the health of the breast and the movement of lymph in and out of the breast.
Oh, that's interesting.
Onions look like the body's cells, obviously magnified. And today's research shows that onions help clear waste materials from all the body's cells. They even produce tears, which wash the epithelial layers of the eyes.
That's true. And a bit of pain, but that's true.
A working companion is garlic, and it also helps to eliminate waste materials and dangerous-free radicals from the body.
Uh-huh.
And it, doesn't that also even thin the blood?
Could, garlic? Sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it does.
So God left us great clues as to what foods help with what parts of our bodies.
I think it's amazing how the universe is put together. To me, it's just awesome to see some of the things that we can make parallels to. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Pam from New Jersey. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Dr. Saputo.
How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for the call. I talked to you last week. I had been in a bad car accident, actually several of them, and they wanted to take my neck and back, and I'm in constant pain. And you had recommended the infrared light therapy.
Yeah, infrared light therapy. Uh-huh.
Yes, and I saw that you can purchase a unit. I don't know if you think that that would be enough. If you, it's called light relief. If you uh-huh. think that a home unit would do the job, or if I should seek a practitioner.
Well, here's the difference. Okay, I have a machine that's coming to my office that costs $500,000. Okay,
wow,
that's a stunning number to deliver light to people who have neuropathy and can be used for a variety of other things as well. Now, that's a far cry from the $50 or $500 that you might spend if you get a product, okay, that's over the counter. Now, that doesn't mean it can't work, and you could give it a try. Because for people who have been through what you have and had multiple accidents and have lots of trauma, infrared light does a lot, and that may be sufficient. You know, we used to put people with tuberculosis in what? Solariums, so they could get light therapy from the sun. There are lots of ways that we can get light that are healthy, and being in it is one. But if you have something as advanced as you do, then I think seeing a practitioner who has an imager, an infrared imager, which is a way of measuring the infrared light that's emitted by the body to produce a thermogram, will give you great picture of what's happening in your body. And based on the patterns that you see, you can know, if you're experienced, where to put the light, how much to put, and follow in real time what you're doing as you're treating. So there's a big difference between buying something, okay, that you read, that you see on television, and going to an experienced practitioner who has these tools like what I'm talking about. So you're on the right track there, Pam, and you should give it a try if you can't find a practitioner.
What you don't really want to do
is just go to some practitioner who has one of those lasers that's being used and doesn't have a scanner and is just, you know, waving the light over your skin. Chances are that's going to be a lot less effective than what I'm telling you about.
Oh, would you know of? I know you recommended Michael Shatner to the last.
Yeah, Michael's
person.
Great.
Yes. Oh, I met him, actually. He is absolutely wonderful. I can't say enough about him.
No, he's a stellar doctor. He's one of the best doctors in America.
And you know what? He's so humble, too. He's such a great doctor, and he's very humble and such a nice person, too.
Right.
Would you know of someone that you could recommend in the New Jersey or New York area? I'm in New Jersey. That does the infrared therapy?
I can't because I don't know the practitioners there. It wouldn't surprise me if there wasn't anybody there.
You might be able to Google it.
Well, you might. I mean, if you put infrared light therapy practitioners, you may find something that way. This is too bad because this technology is one of the treatments for tomorrow. This is such a powerful thing using light to do things like increase circulation instantly.
But you have patients come and see you from out of town.
Oh, I have patients out of town all the time coming. But let me talk about what it does. It increases circulation instantly by releasing nitric oxide. It increases mitochondrial production of ATP, which is the energy currency of the body, many-fold, instantly almost. Increases lymphatic drainage, and it works on nerves to try and reduce pain. It boosts immunity across the board with almost any kind of cell you're talking about. There are lots of interesting biophysical and biochemical changes that occur from this, what looks like just the light, which you can't even see because it's infrared. So it's a shame that that's where it is, and I'll have to say that the FDA should be shot once again because those bloody idiots would not allow the person who's making the best equipment to get what's called a 510K, which would allow it to be used for specific indications for treatment and medicine, which means that what I do is I charge my patients $25 for this expensive equipment that I have for a 15-minute treatment to use the equipment plus my time. And you know, people can't afford to do a lot of the treatment if you were to charge what would be appropriate, because they just they want to support the people in big pharma who are making all these drugs for pain. So it would cost them billions and billions of dollars because we're moving forward and progressing with a technology that should be in the mainstream today.
All the pain clinics should have it.
Every pain clinic should have it.
And the diabetic clinics should have it.
Absolutely. We shouldn't have diabetics who are having pain anymore, except on a rare occasion. And the ulcers that they get and the amputations that they get, many of those could be prevented. So we're looking at something that's just unbelievably terrible that we can't bring forward in the mainstream. And that's why you'll have trouble, Pam, trying to find somebody in the area where you are.
Dr. Saputo, how would I know, like you were saying, that I wouldn't want someone that's just going to wave a laser over my skin? How would I know, what should I ask so I determine who's going to do the kind of therapy that you do as opposed to just waving that laser?
Well, they should have an infrared scanner. If they do, you'll be able to see your picture because they'll do a thermogram. It's the same kind of thing that we do in breast cancer screening. We do thermography, which, of course, is the best test you can do, especially under the age of 50, to try and find cancers of the breast. So you have to make sure they have a scanner, that they have had some experience, too. If somebody's had less than a few years of experience, you probably don't want them because they don't know enough. It's not just a slam dunk thing that you just start doing overnight. And there are very few, you can't find a training course. There are a few training courses by some of the companies that try to teach you without the use of a scanner, and they do reasonably well if they're experienced, but you're not going to do anywhere near as well and if you have an infrared scanner.
And so, if you can't find somebody, you might think about coming here.
Well, yeah,
I mean,
to California.
Some people do that.
Well, that's true. I mean, yeah, I do see people out of town. So thanks for calling, Pam, and you have a great day.
Thank you, honey. Thank you so
much. You feel better.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Thank you, Vicki. Thank you both.
Okay, you're welcome. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from George from Long Island. Hi, George.
Hello, doctor. Your show is excellent. I have to tell you, I learned so much from listening to you guys.
Well, we appreciate it. Tell your friends.
Thank you.
My war story goes back to dental x-rays. I had to get two implants put in.
Oh, yes.
And they wanted a full jaw x-ray. All right, so I went in there. She didn't position me right. Did a counterweight, smashed my shoulder.
Needless to say, no.
What?
Yeah. So they did a second one.
Uh-huh.
3 months later, he wants another one to see if the bone graft works. I questioned him about it. He goes, this machine has less radiation than a dental x-ray. That was his answer.
Yeah, right.
He's going to want another one next week when he puts the anchors in. What can I take before and after to mitigate the radiation?
That's a really good question, and there are things you can do. What I do and what I advise my patients is to take a few grams of vitamin C about a half an hour before. You might want to do that. You may want to take maybe 800 IUs of vitamin E, okay, in the meal prior to going there. And that should do a substantial amount to reduce the ionizing effect of radiation.
There's also some homeopathy that's called Radtox.
Uh-huh. That you might think about as well. But I would definitely think about those two. And once again, George, these are suggestions for you to mull over. This is not, I can't treat you over the air because you're not my patient.
And that's also a good thing for people to take before they go on an airplane.
Oh, yeah. I mean, vitamin C, you know, if you irradiate rats, okay, with a lethal dose of radiation, and you pre-treat half of them with a couple of grams of vitamin C and not the other half, the ones that are not treated with C are going to go on and die. And the ones that you treat with vitamin C are going to, maybe half of them will die. So you can do a lot to protect against the effects of the acute effects of radiation by using vitamin C. And that's what I'd recommend.
Great. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for calling, George. Have a great day. The lines are open. The number is 888-874-4888.
A topic that's not often highlighted is the complications of breast cancer therapy. I mean, even up to 6.5 years after treatment. And a new study now discloses the shocking scope of these complications, with 60% of 2.6 million survivors of breast cancer reporting at least one related complication. Now, let's talk about some of the complications, if they're worth it, or if it's worth it, or what could be done with conventional treatment to prevent so many awful long-lasting side effects.
That is such a good point, Vicki, because we look at people who have cancer and say, we got to get rid of the cancer, and what we do is all the things that we know of that might be helpful. And I will say that for stage 4 cancer, Western medicine is close to useless. So if you have a far advanced cancer, chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery are not really realistic options. But if you've got an early cancer, okay, and you could cure it, okay, maybe you've got chronic lymphocytic leukemia or something like that, you can do a lot, okay, with chemotherapy to do that. And breast cancer, sometimes you can do a lot to help with as well. But the problem is when you do, you're going to see these complications in about 60% of people, even at 6 years. And for some of those people, about half of those people, they're going to have two or more symptoms. And the kinds of things you're going to see are things like lymphedema, where you get this big swollen arm on the side where the surgery was done, and they've taken out lymph nodes, and now you've reduced the drainage of lymph back into the body.
And you can have this forever.
Oh, yeah. It's a miserable thing, and you're more at risk for infections. You can get skin problems from the radiation and surgical pain and weight gain and fatigue and peripheral neuropathies. A lot of people are getting peripheral neuropathies from the treatment. And, of course, what's the treatment for that? All these drugs. I mean, like Neurontin and Lyrica and morphine and codeine. And
Instead of the photon stimulator,
which does such a good job.
And chemotherapy many times causes heart problems in people.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that's right. So this is a huge thing. And unfortunately, the care of these things is fragmented, meaning that you've got an oncologist, you've got your regular doctor, you've got a surgeon, you may have a radiation oncologist, and they're worried about what? Their special little problems. Their special field of expertise. And that's what they focus on. And what about the other issues that occur? I mean, we've got a human being who has cancer. We're not talking about the cancer in room 432. We're talking about a person. And so the solution that this particular article that was published in the April issue of the journal Cancer said that what they should do is physical therapy and exercise as treatment for all these complications. And yes, that's a good start, but that's not the whole treatment for cancer. Give me a break. And people who are depressed or stressed or fatigued or have quality of life issues that are a problem, I mean, we can do much better by addressing all that. And if we remember that these are human beings that have problems, there's a lot that we can do that is going to try and make these things get better. And a lot of it is lifestyle stuff, but some of it's listening and caring and supporting and being with. And it's not some drug, okay, that's going to be used to try and manage symptoms, okay, that need to be gone into in a deeper way.
And another thing we've talked about frequently is many times women that are diagnosed with breast cancer have ductal carcinoma in situ, and they really don't need the chemotherapy or the radiation.
Well, that's a very interesting point, Vicki. When you're looking at 20 to 25% of people who have problems with that, That's a huge number. So I agree with you. We've got time to take one more quick call from Ray from about high intensity lasers. So Ray, you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, doctor, for taking my call. I was
We just got about one minute here.
High intensity laser. I've been looking around the area, New York.
Yeah, well, see, high intensity, I can't hear very well, but what Ray is asking about is, what about high intensity lasers? Should we use them? Keep in mind that lasers are coherent light, and they can cause tissue damage. And they also have a very narrow wave band of frequencies of light because it's coherent light, as opposed to what we use in my practice, which is light-emitting diodes that are at about 860 or 870 nanometers. And there's probably 15 or 20 a range on either side of it, so maybe 850 to 880 that we're actually using. With a laser, you don't get that. And so I'm more inclined to use what's safer, do it under scanning, and be sure that when we do it under scanning, that we're being careful not to cause effects that would be negative. Because you can burn the tissues if you're not careful, although you're not going to do that with an LED, unless you just don't know what you're doing. And follow and see what's happening in real time with your infrared scanner. So are you still there, Ray?
I am, doctor. So the infrared light would be a much safer way to go.
I think the infrared light using LEDs is a better way to go under continuous monitoring with an infrared scanner. So thanks for the call.
That's thermo.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're at the end of the show here. I want to thank you for your calls today. I'm sorry we couldn't answer all the calls that came in, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo. We have a website called drsaputo.com. If you have questions, you can go to, because there's a lot of information on that site. There are over 2,000 audios and videos that will be directed to answering your questions. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next week. Have a great week.
Have a healthy week.